Welcome to New World Notes, ably hosted by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. Today we'll look at the corporate war against the U.S. economy, a war also known as business as usual. We'll hear from Jim Hightower, Noam Chomsky, Mike Stout, and a few others, plus 2.5 years of newspaper headlines, all saying, employment down, profits up, Wall Street rejoices. Hey, who's in charge here? I don't know either, but we can sure rule out the 99%. I hope you'll stay tuned. Hey, if you can believe the newspapers, there's good news about the economy. The Dow Jones Industrial Average went past 14,000 and is hitting record highs. That's good news for the stockholders. But if you get your money from wages or salary, or used to before they laid you off, if you're stuck in the bottom 99%, you may be celebrating a bit less. Wages remain sunk. Unemployment remains at depression-era levels. Cities and states are going broke and slashing human services. Hunger and poverty are rising. And that's just in the richest country in the world. Let's not even talk about Greece and Spain and nearby Mexico. But even as we speak, top corporate executives are clinking their champagne glasses to celebrate another banner year for profit. Bonuses all around, boys! How can this be? Let's start with an interesting article by Dave Johnson, published March 5 in Common Dreams Online. He quotes a number of newspaper headlines. I checked them out. They're all from reputable sources, including the New York Times, LA Times, Huffington Post, and the Business Insider. The story is titled, Our Economic Mess Explained with Headlines. Here goes. I was doing research for a post, but the headlines told a story of their own, so here they are. November 2010. Corporate profits hit new record. U.S. workers still struggling. January 2011. Profits are booming. Why aren't jobs? May 2011. Corporate profits at all-time high as recovery stumbles. June 2011. Since 2009, 88% of income growth went to corporate profits. Just 1% went to wages. July 2011. Corporate profits share of pie, most in 60 years. July 2011. A boom in corporate profits, a bust in jobs and wages. August 2011. Companies near record profits amid high unemployment. October 2011. While corporate profits are at 60-year high, Main Street businesses continue to struggle. November 2011. GDP revised downward. Corporate profits up. February 2012. Corporate margins and profits are increasing, but workers' wages aren't. May 2012. Corporate profits return to pre-recession levels, but job growth and investment remain weak. June 2012. Corporate profits just hit an all-time high. Wages just hit an all-time low. July 2012. The economy stinks, but at least corporate profits are at 60-year high. December 2012. Corporate profits hit all-time high as wages drop to record low. And March 4, 2013, corporate profits have risen almost 20 times faster than workers' incomes since 2008. Thank you, Dave Johnson, for a review of Press Headlines. And with a few more details, here's a story I found in the New York Times, March 4, 2013. It has some details about our local contributor to the Dow Jones Index, United Technologies Corp. United Technologies is maybe not a household name outside of Connecticut. It's a big military contractor with some civilian business, too. Appropriately, its headquarters is a gold-colored big building in Hartford. Pratt & Whitney jet engines, Sikorsky helicopters, UTC aerospace, not to mention Carrier air conditioners and Otis elevators. That's all United Technologies. Even if you're not wearing a uniform, you can at least ride their elevators. And I will read from this article. March 4, 2013, New York Times. Recovery in U.S. lifting profits, not adding jobs. Wall Street is buoyant. A gulf is widening as federal budget cuts take effect. By Nelson D. Schwartz. With the Dow Jones Industrial Average flirting with a nominal record high, the split between American workers and the companies that employ them is widening and could worsen in the next few months as federal budget cuts take hold. Stock markets are thriving even as the economy is barely growing and unemployment remains stubbornly high. With millions still out of work, companies face little pressure to raise salaries, while productivity gains allow them to increase sales without adding workers. Quote, so far in this recovery, corporations have captured an unusually high share of the income gains, unquote, said Ethan Harris, co-head of global economics at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Quote, the U.S. corporate sector is in a lot better health than the overall economy, unquote. The result has been a golden age for corporate profits, especially among multinational giants. As a percentage of national income, corporate profits stood at 14.2% in the third quarter of 2012, the largest share at any time since 1950. The portion of income that went to employees was 61.7%, near its lowest point since 1966. Corporate earnings have risen at an annualized rate of 20.1% since the end of 2008. The path charted by United Technologies, an industrial giant based in Hartford that is one of the 30 companies in the Dow, underscores why corporate profits and share prices continue to rise in a lackluster economy and a stagnant job market. At 218,300 employees, United Technologies' workforce is virtually unchanged from 7 years ago, even though annual revenue soared to $57.7 billion in 2012 from $42.7 billion in 2005. The relentless focus on maintaining profit margins continues, even though profit and revenue have never been higher. 4 days after the company's shares soared past $90 to a record high last month, United Technologies confirmed it would eliminate an additional 3,000 workers this year, on top of the 4,000 workers let go in 2012 as part of a broader restructuring effort. When companies do hire, it is often overseas where the growth is. Thus spake the New York Times. Well, Jim Hightower, as usual, explains the problem in a folksier way. He says what we ought to do is throw out the Dow Index and replace it with the Doug Index. Here's Jim Hightower.
It's a sign that the economy is healing, exclaims a happy headline. It signals that things are getting back to normal, says a delighted market analyst, and the New York Times heralded it as a golden age. The it they're hailing is the Tao, that mythical and mystical force said by faithful Taoists to be the way, the provider of good fortune, often by magical means. It's the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and this holy measure of corporate stock prices is now smiling warmly on its acolytes. On March 5th, the Dow Jones average reached a new high, regaining every dime of the $11 trillion that Wall Street investors had lost in the 2007 crash. Worker productivity is zooming. Corporate profits are soaring. Wealth is flowing like a mighty river. Wall Street is buoyant. All praise the Dow. Unless, of course, your wealth is dependent not on stock prices, but on wages. In that case, you're among the majority of Americans who are concerned about the Doug Jones average. Forget all the buzz about a golden age. Doug, Darcy, Dewana, and all the other Joneses can't even afford to eat at the Golden Arches, for they're still mired in the great job depression that Wall Street's crash caused. Washington rushed to rescue the financial elites, but the Joneses are still getting stiffed by the very elites Washington continues to coddle. United Technologies is typical. The profits of this manufacturing giant have never been higher, and it continues to be blessed with lucrative government contracts. Grand! But how are its workers doing? Only 4 days after its stock prices reached a record high in February, United Tech's honchos announced the firing of 3,000 workers, on top of the 4,000 they fired last year. This is Jim Hightower saying the continued separation of the few from the rest of us is revolting in both meanings of that word.
Now let's step back for a wider perspective. The economy didn't end up in this state because of nature. Political decisions were made, and laws were changed, and federal regulations were changed. These changes turned a more egalitarian economy into an economy expressly designed to make the very rich much richer and make the public much poorer. It's by design, not chance. Laws were changed to deregulate the banks, drastically reduce corporate taxes, slash income taxes on the wealthy, smash labor unions, and encourage companies to close factories in the United States and open new factories in Indonesia and China, to keep the minimum wage rock bottom, and for God's sake, don't guarantee low-cost universal health care. This policy of hurting the 99% to drive up corporate profits picked up some steam in the 1970s under Democrat Jimmy Carter. It really took off in the 1980s under Republican Ronald Reagan, continued to worsen under Republican Bush 1, Democrat Bill Clinton, Republican Bush 2, and Democrat Barack Obama. There's a moral in here somewhere about whom the Democratic Party is actually serving, but let's not go there now. The point is that the American economic system did not make the rich richer and the 99% poorer because of natural and inevitable causes. It didn't happen because of the internet or new technology. It happened because the rich and the corporate elite wanted it to happen, and Congress and the president changed American laws to give them what they wanted and make it happen. And there was a time, even in my lifetime, when even the most reactionary right-wing Republicans were less reactionary and right-wing than today's Democratic Party leaders, to say nothing of today's Republicans. It didn't used to be this way, I remember. Here's a couple of interesting takes on that theme by an unlikely pair of allies. The populist agitator Jim Hightower and the consummate scholar and intellectual Noam Chomsky. Here again is Jim Hightower.
Well now, here's some unexpected news. It comes from what purports to be an official document of the National Republican Party. And wow, the policy positions it contains show that the party leaders really are serious about coming to their senses and rejecting the plutocratic extremism and far-right wackiness that has stained their recent presidential, congressional, and gubernatorial campaigns. Right at the top, this 18-page manifesto proclaims that, quote, "Our government was created by the people for all the people, and it must serve no less a purpose. All the people." Forget last year's ridiculous pontifications by Mitt Romney and others, dividing America into virtuous creators, like themselves, and worthless moochers, like you and me. This document abounds with commitments to the common good. Quote, "America does not prosper," it proudly proclaims on page 3, "unless all Americans prosper." Shazam, that's downright democratic. And how's this for a complete turnaround? Labor is the United States. The men and women who, with their minds, their hearts, and hands, create the wealth that is shared in this country, they are America. Holy Koch brothers, share the wealth? Yes, and how about this? The protection of the right of workers to organize into unions and to bargain collectively is the firm and permanent policy of the Republican Party. Eat your heart out, Scott Walker and you other labor-bashing GOP governors. The document also supports the Postal Service, the United Nations, equal rights for women, expanding our national parks, vigorous enforcement of antitrust laws, and raising the minimum wage. New enlightenment in the grand old party. Hallelujah! This is Jim Hightower saying, can all this be true? Yes, except it's not new. This document is the Republican Party platform of 1956.
And now we'll catch Noam Chomsky. Last week, we heard a really powerful speech by him on capitalism and climate catastrophe. The talk ended with Chomsky reporting that many, many U.S. business leaders still are spending many millions of dollars trying to persuade the public falsely that global warming is not happening. So let's keep burning those hydrocarbons. This part you didn't hear. In the Q&A after the speech, one person asked why any business leader would do anything so insane. Chomsky addresses that question and then goes on with a gorgeous historical survey about how U.S. corporations used to have more of a stake in U.S. society. Back in the days that Jim Hightower was talking about, the 1950s. But business got Congresses and presidents to re-engineer the laws governing the economy. Now, with unhindered globalization allowed by law, they can thumb their noses at the local and national economy. If they can increase their own profit by wrecking the economy of any nation, even the United States, well, that sounds like just good business. Here's Noam Chomsky.
You mentioned that the masters, as you said, would like to keep the scientific truth of climate change from reaching, you know, the masses. To what end, I would ask? Are these people stupid? Do they not think that a global climate catastrophe would affect them? Or are they blind to it?
No, they're working on standard market principles. You're trying to maximize short-term profit and market share. That's what it means to be head manager of a corporation. You don't worry much about what's going to happen down the road. In fact, by now, after the changes of the last 30 years, changes in state introduced changes, incidentally, in corporate and the rules of corporate governance and so on, that's even more true than it was in the past. I mean, in the past, if you go back, say, to the 1950s in the United States, the major corporations had a kind of a stake in the society. You know, kind of famous examples going back farther is Henry Ford raising wages to $5 so people would buy his cars. But if you go back to the 1950s, it's still true. So the head of GM, say, or GE, they had a stake in the health of the society. That's much less true today. With the radical changes in the way the economy was designed, and I mentioned designed because it was purposeful and conscious, there were alternatives. Roughly in the late 70s, going on through the Reagan years and on, it was redesigned to sharply increase the role of finance, of financialization. By 2007, when the latest crash hit, financial institutions had about 40% of corporate profits, which is colossal. Go back to the big growth period, the 50s and 60s, banks were banks. There weren't even interstate banks, let alone huge investment firms. And there was a lot of regulation. New Deal regulation was in place, so, you know, no crises. But there's the big shift towards financialization and also towards export of production. So that, again, I mean, it's always happened. It goes back to the early 19th century, but it really took off in the 70s and 80s. Along with that goes rapid concentration of wealth. It's gone way up. And concentration of wealth carries along almost reflexively concentration of political power, which leads to legislation, which carries the vicious cycle further. But the end result is that, say, Apple or Google or GE, they don't care that much about the domestic population here. They got their workforce elsewhere in places where you can get cheap labor under hideous conditions and you don't have to worry about any constraints. And they have a kind of a global market. Actually, the situation was pretty well described in a brochure that was put out by Citigroup a couple of years ago. A Citigroup, this huge banking conglomerate, which once again is feeding at the public trough of, as it's been doing ever since the early 1980s, its predecessor in the early 1980s. You crash, you go to the taxpayer, he bails you out, they're doing it again. But they put out a brochure for investors, which is worth reading. It urged investors to keep to what they call their plutonomy index, which apparently way outperformed the general index of stocks since the 80s, since the Reagan years. Plutonomy means the wealthy, the very wealthy, globally. I mean, they happen to be concentrated heavily in the United States and England, a couple of other countries, but it's all over. You go to a sub-Saharan country, there are people with spectacular wealth. So just pay attention to the plutonomy, the ones where, you know, the very wealthy, and the rest we can kind of forget about. Actually, there's a name for the rest. They're sometimes called the precariat, people who live a precarious existence. And it's advisable that people be driven to the precariat. Sometimes that's even said by the gurus of the modern economy. Alan Greenspan, for example, when he was still St. Alan, you know, before everything crashed, this was back in the late 90s, when he was testifying to Congress and he was hailing the wonderful economy he was running, he explained to Congress that it's based substantially on what he called growing worker insecurity, which is a very healthy thing from the point of view of economic theory, because if workers are insecure, they're not going to ask for higher wages and benefits, and therefore you can make more profit. So therefore he's doing fine. So we have a global precariat and a global plutonomy. I mean, not, you know, they vary from country to country. And that's the real shift in the economy. It's not from the U.S. to China. That's mostly myth. But there is a shift towards a global split between a plutonomy and a precariat. But that means that the ones who own and manage the economy just care less than before about their own society as long as it continues to provide a powerful state which can bail them out when they get into trouble, can protect them from adverse consequences, and can keep producing the innovations and creative activity that drive the economy forward. And that's what we're moving towards.
And water, food and air, fracking slaughter, cancer everywhere, public transit, teachers cut, banker bandits kicking up buzz, privatize, deregulate, shred the safety net, steal and confiscate till there ain't nothing left. We got no choice if we want to survive. Raise your voice, destiny cries. It's time to unite the 99% not together, defy the 1/10%. Stand up for your rights. It only makes sense. Let the rebel in you rise. To the devil, system dies. We the people will occupy. They'll beat us, evict us, tear down our tents, pound us with their clubs and pepper spray. Just and we ain't going away. election's fixed. The media's paid off by the super rich. Big corporations, plutocracy, suffocate the nations. Democracy, empire war, supporting despots. Exploit the poor, the only answer they got. Their dirty hands in every corner of the globe. We better ban, there's nowhere left to go. It's time to unite, the 99% not together. Defy the tenth of 1%. Stand up for your rights. It only makes sense to let the rebel spirits rise. Till this devil system dies, we the people will occupy. It's time to unite.
That's Mike Stout, a new name to me, but turns out he's been agitating, musically and otherwise, for a good while. Another fine, pro-people, pro-labor voice coming out of the city of Pittsburgh. That's also the home of folk singer Anne Feeney, whose politics are pretty much on the same wavelength as Mike Stout and yours truly. We'll hear some more from them, and from me too, but not today, as our time is up. Thanks again to Chuck Rosina up in Boston, who recorded Noam Chomsky, and thank you for listening to New World Notes. Unlike United Technologies, we don't have a golden building, but we both come to you from darkest Connecticut, land of steady habits. Check out our website at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. On behalf of the entire New World Notes staff, this is Kenneth Doust, advising illicit to my non-carborundum. In solidarity, there is strength. Eat more kale, and please tune in again next week. Ciao.